90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported JAZZ 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 24th of September, Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 1 minute after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. It's going to be a doozy.
Something's not right there. I'm not hearing anybody.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anybody either.
Well, they redid the board because we had
a meltdown.
Well, no, a CD player blew up on us.
Right.
So they had to, they came in, changed that. And while they were at it, they tweaked the board. So I noticed when I was doing my show Thursday night, all the levels, you know, that I'm normally comfortable just sitting and sitting back and relaxing, they were pegging it like nobody's business and, you know, going crazy. So
yeah, I'm not hearing anything through my headsets.
I've got it cranked all the way up and, yeah, I can't hear anything.
Yeah, I'm... We're going out. So.
Well, in the meantime, well, as long as we're going out, I guess that's the important thing. And give us a call. Let us know that we're going out. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. The advent of online shopping changed the retail industry forever, but many consumers are still not willing to shop for consumer electronics online despite potential cost savings. New data from market research firm the NPD Group shows that while nearly two-thirds of U.S. consumers use the Internet to research consumer electronics purchases, only about half go on to purchase electronics online. It's not surprising to see so many consumers won't buy TVs, smartphones, or other popular consumer electronics products online, despite using the Internet to perform basic product research, said NPD analyst Stephen Baker in a statement. Computers and other IT products have a much longer history online with a wide variety of outlets, including direct sales from manufacturers for consumers to choose from. The firm found that computers and computer software were the most popular online purchases for consumers, with 34% of NPD's 1,326-person study saying they would make such purchases online. Televisions were the least likely online electronic purchase, with only 19% of respondents saying they would buy a TV online. 32% will buy an e-reader, and 29% will buy a tablet. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, I apparently did not put the poll up last night.
Slacker.
I am a slacker, but I'll put it up when I get home. But in the meantime, do you or don't you buy your... Oh, that's a little
better.
That's
better.
Do you or don't you buy your electronics online? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I found another button I can play with.
Congratulations.
Woohoo!
As someone,
it's only been, what, over 2 years?
As someone who works in a retail store, I'm kind of glad about that study because we're always afraid it's the other way around. People come into the store to look at it and then they go home and buy it online.
But apparently they don't do that much.
And I can kind of see not buying a TV online because it's heavy and the shipping costs would be terrible.
Yeah,
the Jim Hansen one is cute on Google. They follow your cursor around, and every now and then they'll do something. I saw the one monster eat the other monster. The Google Doodle is celebrating Jim Hansen's 75th birthday. The 75th anniversary of his birth, I guess. And it has a bunch of Muppets. There he goes. He's eating one. So a cute little Google Doodle that has mesmerized Nick.
It is mesmerizing. It's kind of fascinating.
And the new Muppet movie coming out in a few weeks, too.
I know. There's a new Muppet movie coming out. Where did he come back from? I don't want to even think of that.
Well, he came from underneath, so.
Yes, that's my point. That's my point. All right, here's the deal. In terms of buying things online, we find that a lot of people, at least a lot of people that I talk to, I'm sure you guys find it too, they want to touch. They want to feel what it is. You know, you can look at all the specs all you want, but when somebody says to you it's a, you know, 4.7-inch screen on your phone or it's a 3.9, yep, what does that actually mean? You need to hold it in your hand. Oh, it's Super AMOLED. It's super bright. What does that actually mean?
Yeah.
I want to hold it in my hand. I want to see what it looks like. I want to see what it feels like. And particularly when it comes to laptops and particularly notebooks and tablets, you want to hold them. You want to feel them. You want to feel the keyboard. You want to be able to do a little bit of typing on it, because that's what makes you happy with it or not happy with it. I mean, we talk a lot about the speed of the processor and the size of the hard drive and the amount of RAM, but the reality is that you spend all day with the keyboard, the mouse, and the screen. And if you're not happy with those three things, you're not going to be happy with your computer. You know, the little netbooks like mine have a fairly small screen comparatively. And I'm happy with that because of what I do with it. I know that I'm going to, you know, be limited in a couple of things, but mostly I'm fine. But for people who are looking to replace everything they do with a netbook, they suddenly realize they've got a lot less screen real estate than they ever had before.
Right.
And the keys are a little mashed together more than they are on a full-size keyboard. So if you're a touch typist, that gets a little bit annoying. So There are a whole lot of problems with things like that, and you've got to look at them, you got to feel them, you got to touch them, and often enough, while you're doing that, the salespeople have an opportunity to, I guess the best way to put it is to establish a relationship with you. You know, so
yeah, that's a question we get a lot is, you know, why buy here versus there? And it's, you know, for all the stores, it's sort of like that. Why buy at this store versus that store? And, you know, some stores will, you know, form a relationship with you, and some stores will push a box out the door. So it's talk to the people. And we've said that for years, talk to the people. You know, they're the people you're going to be talking with when there's problems. They're the people that are going to help you with your stuff.
Yeah. If you know, that when you go to buy something at a store, if you're in a big chain store, you're just a number to them. You're just a statistic. When you go to a smaller local business, then you find that you're really talking to often the owner.
Yep.
As happens in a couple of shops that I could mention. And but I can't. I could mention them, but I won't. Yeah. Or you're talking directly to the technician who really is going to be handling your case. You know,
yep.
The owner will come out and chat with you. The technician will actually show you what it is that he or she is doing. So I think that you begin to develop a relationship there that you don't have when you buy a big box thing, and you certainly don't have that relationship when you buy something online.
Right.
You know, there are things I will buy online because, after all, they've become commodities.
Well,
when I'm building my own machine, I'm the technician. I know what I'm going to do, and I know how I'm going to do it. So if I go to an online dealer and buy myself some RAM or whatever. That's fine. I can handle that, and I know that I can replace it if it goes bad. But I know what I'm doing. If you're looking to buy a computer and you're not a computer person, then you really need to establish a relationship with the person you're doing from, and you can do that a lot better in person than online.
Well, yeah, like we've always said, you got a face to talk to, an actual face that you can go there, you know, set it down, describe what's going on, and get something accomplished, as opposed to trying to do it over, like you say, through an email or this and that, and yeah, send it in, and we'll do this and that, and, you know, there's not that warm fuzzy.
Yep, that's exactly right.
We should mention the numbers a couple times here.
And I believe we will.
And also, one of the other emails that I had folks come in is mentioning, believe it or not, what our website and where to see us through the chat and also for the live camera.
Easy enough to do.
Yeah.
If you want to give us a call directly live right now, Saturday afternoon at 12:10 p.m., It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. You can call us toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. You can reach us via the online IRC chat. It's at FNET, E-F-N-E-T, FNET, and the channel is pound soundbites. So that's Octothorpe, the crosshatch, the pound sign, soundbites. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. You can also see us on the YouTube site.
Ustream.
Ustream site, which is ustream.tv.
Yep.
We've got a link on our website, correct?
Yeah. Right, and you can get to it get to it directly from our website.
Chrome doesn't seem to render our website very well.
What doesn't?
Chrome.
No, it clearly does not. But you'll be able to get hold of us in any one of a dozen different ways if you actually go. Chrome doesn't.
Safari's not doing it very well either.
I don't know. But we're on the air right now. You can join us in the Soundbites chat room. You can check us out on FNET directly. There's the live audio stream, the Ustream live video stream. All of those are available from as links on our website. Those links only appear during the show, so they are available right now. You can see them at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Right on the main screen. If you are not if you are listening to this via, for example, podcast, then you can't see them on the screen because it's not noon to 2 Eastern time on a Saturday.
Although they are on our links list, and you can listen to the audio feed after the show, and you can listen to watch the video streams after the show. We have all the past audios on our podcast feed, and Ustream keeps all the past videos for us because the files are pretty big for a 2-hour video.
Yeah.
So it's really really interesting they're doing that for free, which is nice.
God bless them.
They throw an ad in every now and then.
Yeah,
right.
But so you can go back and watch the old shows as well, at least as far back as we started.
And those are on our link list. Again, if you go to soundbites.org and click on the links tab, you'll see them there. The video stream is link number 4. The podcast on iTunes is link number 3. If you're just podcasting by yourself with the feed, it's link number 2. If you just want to download a show, it's link number 1. That's the deal. And of course, link number 6 is the list of sites we mention weekly on the show. So as we mention various sites, Steve puts them on the show, and that's how that works. We have our first caller, Zach. Where are you calling from, Zach? Zach?
Yeah, I'm calling from Brighton.
Brighton, what can we do for you?
I have a question about backup. I know you talk about it a lot. So I have several computers that back up all the time to a network attack storage. And so what I'm thinking is I'd like to find a way to back up the content of the NAS to an online storage. And when I look at the websites, they seem to charge by computer or by the amount of data. Can you designate your NAS as the computer that you want them to back up, or is that cheating?
It's not cheating.
Okay. I'm not sure of any of the online backups that would do that because they all require software running on your computer to do the backup.
However,
I've seen some NASs have a USB port on the NAS for you to plug a backup drive onto, so it'll back up itself.
Right, I do have that. It does have that. But I just thought it would be nice to have some place off-site.
But if you have network-attached storage, and for everybody else out there, that's just a hard drive that you plug into your network. And it shows up on everybody's machine as an extra drive. You could, and I don't know that this is cheating as such, you could put the software on one of your machines.
Yes.
And just back up the NAS through that machine.
I was wondering if that, I guess I can try it. I wonder if it works. I'll see. That's what I was thinking of doing. I didn't know if that works, but I can give it a try.
It's certainly, you'd want to read the end user license agreement.
Okay.
That'll
take a few days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most of the online backup services have free trials, too, so you can download it, see if it works.
That's a good idea. That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, but if he's just doing it from one local spot, yeah.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we've said before on backups. It's nice to have a local backup drive, but if there's a catastrophe, a fire, a flood, something like that, you lose your main drive and your backup drive because they're in the same building.
And
so having
key thing
that off-site
is
backup
is again,
handy.
What you're backing up. I mean, I see some folks that'll do full images of the computer and then want to back that up to an off-site site, and it's like, worry about the data, the photos, you know, all these other documents that, you know, would take you a long time to recreate as opposed to, say, just reloading the operating system and then putting that stuff back.
Just about every operating system has some sort of documents folder.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you put everything under that documents folder in various other folders,
you're good to go.
Then all you have to worry about is backing up that one folder. Now, that's... It depends, again, on where your mail is and stuff like that, if you're backing that up as well. But if you can manage to put everything in one place, then it's a lot easier to back up. It's a lot easier to restore. And you don't have to worry about backing up Windows. You don't necessarily want to do that anyway. Right.
Because I just do the documents, you know, the music, the pictures, that type of thing.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
We had a customer... recently that their hard drive failed and all they had was online backup. And that was annoying to do a restore because we had to download the 40 gigabytes they had online, and that took a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but that's the other thing I was about to mention. That first time you back up, it's going to be a huge series of documents and an awful lot of data, and it's going to take forever because uploading from a home... based system is very slow.
It could take weeks to upload all that data.
Right. When I started Google Music, of course, I uploaded, you know, thousands and thousands of songs to Google Music. It took days. took days, and that was just the music.
Right. I think it will back up when you're not using the computer when it's as well. Right.
Yeah. Evenings and that, you know, leave it on and let it do it overnight.
Yep. The other thing to worry about with network or internet backup is if your internet provider has a bandwidth cap. We're fairly fortunate in Rochester that the wired ISPs don't have a bandwidth cap, but if you're using wireless, they do. And in some other cities, you'll get bandwidth caps that can be very low, you know, 5 or 10 gigs a month, and that just will kill your bandwidth trying to do an internet backup.
Right. The DSL contract they have doesn't have a cap, at least not yet.
Right. Yep. And you'll find that one of the things is that although that first backup takes forever, depending on the software you're using, additional backups really only back up new or changed files.
Right.
So really, that's going to be pretty easy.
Right. Well, anyhow, thanks for your advice. And, Nick, I hope you're feeling all better.
Thank you. I'm about 80%, and I appreciate your concern. Thanks, Zach.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright and Steve Wright with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the truly great and member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, we better talk about the latest brouhaha. Facebook.
Oh, jeez.
Getting an earful about changes it made to the news feeds right before its annual developers conference on Thursday. Of course, anytime the social networking site makes changes, users revolt at audible levels. Facebook is the world's most popular social networking service with more than 750 million users. So even a small protest can stir up the web. The loudest protest came in 2006 with the launch of news feeds, which turned into one of the site's most popular features. Now users are taking to the news feeds to protest the overhaul of the news feeds. And they are complaining in comments to the official Facebook blog post announcing the changes that were supposed to help users by surfacing the most important information about their friends instead of just the most recent. The main complaint, an algorithm that spits out your top stories by crunching factors such as which friends you interact with most and which of your friends' posts get the most comments or likes, isn't working. For example, it apparently thinks that my own comments are the most important to me.
Yeah.
I don't actually need to see my comments unless somebody else comments on them. Another point of contention, Facebook's new ticker in the upper right corner.
Oh, yeah.
Which streams your friends' activity in real time, like Twitter. Some users complain it's a distraction. Others are calling on Facebook to dump it. Personally, I think it's just ridiculous because without context, I don't know what's being said. Fred Smith liked Mary Jones's post. I don't care. Unless I know what the post is, and I'm not going to be jumping over there to look at it every time.
Well, that's what maybe they're trying to drive is more traffic.
Maybe.
You know, this way, then, when some of the other advertisers or that type of stuff, they can sit there and say, well, see, we're generating this much traffic, you know, because we're pulling them from this site to cause them to go to that one and this and that. And you're getting so many hits.
Yep.
And that's what they're trying to sell is the hits.
Always. One concern some are raising, that the ticker can give you access to the private posts of people who you are not friends with if a friend of yours likes a post or comments on it. That's not true, according to a Facebook spokes robot. Commenting or liking a post doesn't change its privacy settings. If you can't see a post because of its privacy settings, it won't show up for you anywhere on Facebook, including in your news feeds or in your ticker. Yeah, like Facebook cares about privacy. As for the changes to the news feed, Facebook released the following statement. Our goal with these improvements is to make it easier for people to keep up with their friends no matter how frequently or infrequently they visit Facebook, and to make sure they never miss important updates. In addition, tickers offer an easy way to see and chat with your friends about photos, articles, and other things they're posting in real time. We constantly work to make Facebook better, and we're gathering and evaluating feedback on all the products, yada, yada, yada. If this brouhaha follows the usual course, users will complain, threaten to leave, and then learn to love or at least live with the changes. Or, of course, move to Google+, which is now open to everybody. How do you feel about the changes to news feeds and the new ticker? What are your thoughts? Give them to us, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
As you know, I love Firefox.
Sure.
And one of my downfalls, a friend happened to point it out to me this morning, is I have when I click on my Firefox, that's just one of the browsers. I counted. I had like 47 tabs open.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was trying to explain to him was, you know, I can be there, and it, just like in Facebook and a number of these other sites, it can sit there and say, I'm online.
Which technically you are.
Yes, and it says I'm there, and yeah, you know, you're doing this, and you're active and everything else. And I've had some folks say, well, I tried to IM you when you were on Facebook. It said you were online. And I go, yeah, that's the way they create it, because then they think there's more traffic there. Yep. They're spoofing a lot of folks, making them think, oh, well, the person's there.
Online doesn't
mean... Well, you
mean
are there. You're just not paying attention to it.
It's just one of the other tabs, so I went through. I managed to get it down. I was, like I say, I think it was 47 tabs. I get going.
You have a problem.
Yeah. And I trimmed it down to... I'm down to about 26.
Good for you.
I did half.
That's not bad. No, that's not bad at all.
So, you know, I trimmed it down. But it's just so easy for me. You know, I just click that browser, and the tabs are there. And I knew where they were. Granted, I had some extras that, you know, I obviously cleaned out.
Right.
But you just get in the habit of just doing it. I don't even think about it. Because it's just like anything else, you know, I just do it, open up this browser, and I know what tab. Because I use both Chrome, Firefox, and I use Internet Explorer when I have to. And I've got them set up that they just open up with all these tabs. And I know for this one, I want to go here, this one, there. And
I do mostly Google Talk now.
Okay.
Because I can do video chatting as well. And it pops up no matter where, even if I'm not on, on the tab, I can do it on my, my whatchacallit. All right. Let me tell you that really people are getting nuts about Facebook. One, the thing is, though, they've got this whole new thing called Timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And Timeline is, they show everything you've ever done, and then, you know, you'll want to call out the stuff you don't want.
Oh,
I know, I think it's brilliant. It's brilliant, and here's why. Right now, Facebook has a problem. They have too much data. And the reason, and the point is, if you're going to sell these data to advertisers... You know, the band I liked 5 years ago is not the band I like today, and my interests 5 years ago in general are not my interests today. So mm-hmm. if I set everything up in a timeline, they can successfully ignore the old stuff and just sell the advertisers information about me from the new stuff. They get everybody to do their work for them.
Gotcha.
To do Facebook's work for them. I think it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. Hmm. All right. Our next caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Are you having fun today?
Brian, I was going to call you yesterday, and then...
Every day out of bed is fun.
Yeah. What were you going to call me?
Sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Not late for dinner.
This is a question about the tango.
Yeah.
Okay. I run it semi-religiously.
So you face east
that
while you're...
burn incense and contemplate my navel while it reads my drive, right?
Yeah.
And
a senior navel, you don't want to do that for long.
No, that's true. It's a pretty ugly navel.
Yeah.
Shredder,
as Bill Cosby would say, it pops open and you fly around the room backwards for 15 seconds.
Of course. Now, Shredder reports nothing. Okay?
Yep.
Malware reports nothing.
Right.
Super spyware reports nothing.
Okay.
So the last one I run is Avast.
Yeah.
And that always comes up with Adaware pieces. Like
yep.
7, 8, 9 of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I quarantine them and get rid of them and fix them and all like that.
And they come back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, should I run Adaware more often?
No, what it is in Avast there, it's got some triggers.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, being spoofed right now until they update it so that they don't, you know, report those as issues, you're always going to get it.
So it's one, the one AV suite is or anti-malware suite is seeing the other one's definitions and thinking you may have something infected.
Yeah, yeah. Well, AVG had that for a while, too. It's reporting super anti-spyware and malware bytes, you know, had some issues with their files, you know, and it wanted to get rid of those. And it's like, no, they're good. They can stay. So...
So
yeah, it's just being spoofed right now.
Something out that there was a setting, or you just run them out every time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and sometimes one program is better at finding certain times of things than another program.
That's
is.
Why there's multiple programs in the
right,
Tango.
That's right. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. Oh, well, so I'll go take a nap and let my counters click by. And
that's how it works.
Yep. All right, guys.
Go put your feet up and have a little beverage. What?
I'll try and call you tonight.
Yeah.
All right.
If I'm
talk
awake.
To you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
So weak. You're bad.
Taking personal calls at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Jeez. Honey, I'll be home late. Bring home a loaf of milk and a quart of bread.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, if you remember, we've had those calls too, actually.
Yep.
We all have at one point or another. No, Brian is an old friend of mine, and I meant to call him last night, and then I just got... fixing my print. I have an old laptop that is a print server, and I don't know what I did to screw it up, but we couldn't print anything. And of course, my wife had to print a bunch of stuff, and it took me quite a while to fix my little problem. It turned out to be an awfully simple solution, but it wasn't the first thing I tried.
Turn it on.
No, it was turned. I
plugged
did,
in.
It was in fact plugged in.
RTFM
plugged in tight at both ends.
Somehow, and I don't know how, the SMB protocol had gotten turned off, so it wasn't talking to the rest of the network in the way that the printer needed it to talk to the rest of the network. It was on the network. It was all fine. I could do everything to it, except SMB wasn't actually turned on, and I just never thought about that because it was on the network.
Yeah. You like know? I say, again, we get – that's
hey, I've
where,
been sick.
That's where you and – no, that's where the three of us – and I – this is justification. How's that?
There you go.
That, you know, we just get so complacent in doing stuff that we just take it for granted. And it's like, you know, like me with the tabs and, you know, some of the other stuff. You just do it.
Yep.
And it's...
Well, I set it up, what, a year ago? It's been running perfectly. And then all of a sudden it's
if it
stopped.
Ain't broke, you ain't going to fix it.
And I never thought about the SMB service itself. But it's fine now, but I didn't call Brian because I spent all night doing that, and then I just went to bed. Yeah. All right, our next caller is Joe from Buffalo. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Well, I really love that Google Plus has been opened up to, you know, not being invite only.
Yep.
And... The thing is, I have to wonder, was it some sort of accident that happened and this big Facebook change that everybody seems to hate happens in the same week, a couple days apart from each other?
Yeah.
Coincidence?
I'm sure it is.
You know, I think not.
There's one thing I really don't understand, though, is these entities, we'll say, get so big. Facebook is one of them. Canonical is another. They make these huge changes to how users interact with their product, and then they expect them just, you know, to accept them. Like, you know, this is all the greatest. We know best. In Canonical's case, it was their switch to the Unity desktop, and there's a lot of negative feedback on that.
It's I tried it for 6 months.
Yeah, you
were. No, about three months. And I hated it. I simply could not get used to it. I just didn't. For what I do, you know, I do a lot of jumping back and forth. I do a lot of command line stuff. It just was not useful to me.
Microsoft is the prototypical example. It's like Dave is saying all the time, mm-hmm. you know, what was wrong with the title? Add, remove program.
Yeah.
But no, they had to change that.
Oh, you think that's bad? Wait till you see Windows 8.
Around where you find stuff. I have to wonder, what sample size do they use for testing out these sorts of changes and then foist it on everybody?
Mrs. Wilbert's kindergarten class.
Case with no option to, you know, set it one way or the other.
I think the sample size is whatever they got from their latest drug dealer.
but
yeah,
in terms of that stuff, wait until you see... Windows 8.
You mean Windows Phone Desktop?
Windows Phone Desktop. It's going to look like the Windows Phone. No more no more programs. They'll all be little apps. They'll be little squares, little apps on your desktop. It's going to be horrible.
Apple's already done that with Lion.
And Lion is a crap fest too.
This is the new Lion launchpad.
Wait a minute, guys.
For novice users who don't know about the applications folder.
What? They live under a rock?
It's still horrible.
Well, you turn your computer on and you expect your programs to be in one place and you don't know to look anywhere
else.
Hear
me out though. Windows is still holding true to what I said way back with my beloved program, Windows ME.
Like they do on the iOS device.
And even going back further to the old DOS days.
Uh-huh.
Even number programs are good. Odd ones are bad.
You wait for Windows 8 and tell me.
Lion is Apple's Vista.
But what I'm saying, though, since Windows 8, what I was going to say is before it was the DOS versions. Then we went to Windows 98 was good.
Yep.
ME, bad. Windows XP, good. Windows Vista, bad. Windows 7, good.
Windows 8,
crapola.
I suspect it will be, yeah. But, Joe, you're right about Google Plus.
I'm sorry, on the numbers.
No, that's all right. Google Plus is now open for everybody. All you have to do is go sign up. If you already have a Gmail account, just sign in with your Gmail.
I love Gmail.
And there's your off-site backup for mail, by the way.
Yeah. Yep.
And Google Plus is now open for everybody, and I think it's brilliant. I love Hangouts. I absolutely love them. I really like Google Talk. What's nice about it is it's easier to do. They call them circles. Facebook calls them lists. But you can put people in circles, and you can just look at a certain circle, and you can interact with certain circles. So I can have family. I can have friends.
Circle of friends.
Technoids. I can have, you know, whatever.
And nobody knows what they're called either.
Right. So I can have idiots I have to be friends with.
That was a Joya Tech cartoon.
Technical
last
morons,
week.
Was it?
Yeah.
A lot of people published those
what
online.
What I'd really like to see is for the ability to put keywords with your posts, because I get stuff from people in my circles all the time that I'm just not interested in, but there are some things that they bring up every now and again that I really enjoy reading about.
That would
be a really good feature.
Yeah. One of the things I run into a lot is I don't get on Facebook or Google Plus much, and then when I do, there's thousands of posts that I've missed, and I only have like 5 or 6 people I'm following.
Yeah.
And then you see the same thing getting reshared and reshared. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times I've seen the octopus with the soy sauce or you know, the cat lightsaber.
Right. One of the really interesting things is that it's Google Plus. It's a Google product, so you can search. If there's something you want to see, you can search it. It's pretty nice. All right,
hey,
Joe.
Dave?
Yeah?
Are you on there? I saw a Dave Enright on there, but it didn't seem to be you. I saw Steve there. I saw Nick there, but I didn't see you there.
Where?
On Google Plus.
Google Plus.
No, I'm not there. Well, I might have gotten in there, but I haven't gotten into that part of it yet. I'm basically using right now my Gmail account and the Google Calendar.
Would they have activated Google Plus for all Gmail users or Google account users?
Not
Google account.
You still have to sign up for it.
Yeah, I'll probably get into it when I have the time. That's the whole issue. Is lately I've just had so much other stuff going on.
I do like Google Plus actually more than I like Facebook.
There's a lot of people that seem to be saying Facebook is the next MySpace.
Oh, yeah, I said the same thing myself. Yep, absolutely. All right, we got to take a break, Joe. Thanks a lot. We are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with the hang-up sound on the phone, and with you. Of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415 right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Yeah?
I was waiting for the applause, and there was none.
Or the rest of the music.
I wasn't expecting it from you guys. I was just expecting it. All right, let's go right to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. Great show.
Thanks.
I have a program called Dymo Label Maker on my Mac Tower. And I have Lion, and I can't make this program close. I've heard that certain programs won't close because the line automatically opens up every time I boot up the computer. The only thing I can do is put it on the dock with the little yellow button at the top. The little red button won't make it go away, and if I use the drop-down menu to close the program, that won't close it out either. So I don't know what to do.
Well, the feature in Lion is that when you restart your computer, all of the apps that you had running before will run again, so that it basically picks you right up where you left off. When you quit a program, the next time you launch that program, all the windows you had open will relaunch themselves. I'm looking at the compatibility table. It says that version 8.3.1 is compatible with Lion, and no one is reporting any problems. When you try to use the quit command in the Dymo menu, did you get an error message, or what does it do?
No error message. No, it just sits there. It won't close at all. The only thing I can do is hit the little yellow button and put it down on the dock, and it goes away, and the program goes down on the dock, and it stays there. I shut down the computer, come back, and open it up, and
it's still there. That's a feature in Lion. Any program you have running when you shut down will automatically be running when you start again.
Well, that's a feature. You never close that program then. It's going to stay on the dock.
Well, you have to use the quit command from the program's menu. And if that's not working, there's something wrong somewhere.
Yeah.
I would suggest trying to uninstall and reinstall, even download a current version of it. I'm downloading it now just to see what happens on my Lion machine.
Here's what I have to suggest, though. Is it possible that the Dymo Label Maker software is trying to do something and shut down until it's done? Like,
there may be
Dymo Label Maker.
Right, a window open trying to tell you something. So it's a modal dialog box in programming terms.
Right, and so who knows where it is.
Right, and it's forcing you to answer a question somewhere before you can quit.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
There may be something running in the Dymo software that is preventing you from quitting it until you answer the question or close whatever window is open.
Yeah, because I went for updates and everything, and that didn't do anything. So what I might have to do is your suggestion to uninstall and install again.
Yeah.
Yeah, the release 8.3.1 of Dymo Label Maker supports OS X Lion.
Yeah.
But because earlier releases don't work on Lion.
Right, right. 8.3, right?
8.3.1.
0.1, okay. 8.3.1, all righty.
And that may be the issue. If you had an older version on during your Leopard or your Lion upgrade, it may be incompatible and you may not be able to do an in-place update. You may have to delete the Dymo software and install the newer software yourself manually.
I'll try it.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
And I'm looking for the download button and can't find it.
Well, that's all right. You don't really need it now, do you? And you also don't have a Dymo Label Maker to connect
it to. I've got one at work, but right. We use it on our computers at work, but I haven't got any of them up to Lion.
Right.
Our cash registers are too old. It's just a cash register.
Yeah. What?
Well, it's a computer, but it's just a cash register.
It's just a cash register.
Simplicity.
It was state-of-the-art computers 6-7 years ago that you paid a fortune for, and now it's a cash register.
Oh, here's this one starting to pork me off. Smartphone customers in the U.S. must be wearing a slap me sign on their backs if the latest notification for Verizon is any indication. When Big Red joined the club and went to tiered data plans that allowed overage fees, those with existing unlimited plans were feeling good as they got grandfathered in. Verizon figured out how to coax those folks onto the tiered plans by promising to throttle the network speed for unlimited plan customers who are in the top 5% of data usage. Verizon doesn't like calling the service curtailment throttling. They prefer the term network optimization. According to their press release, the difference between our network optimization practices and throttling is network intelligence. With throttling, your wireless data speed is reduced for your entire cycle 100% of the time, no matter where you are. Network optimization is based on the theory that all customers should have the best network possible, and if you're not causing congestion for others, even if you're using a high amount of data, your connection speed should be as good as possible. So if you're in the top 5% of data users, your speed is reduced only when you are connected to a congested cell site. Once you're no longer connected to a congested site, your speed will return to normal. This could mean a matter of seconds or hours, depending on your location and time of day. In other words, you can't predict when this will happen, what you can do to prevent it, or how long you will be optimized. Which sounds a lot like throttling to me. The only customers subject to optimization are 3G, not 4G, customers with unlimited data plans. Bandwidth curtailment will only happen when a top data user is connected to a congested cell tower. While not being specific about what sort of data usage will put you in the top 5%, the FAQ at Verizon states that currently it is 2 gigabytes or more of data each month. So do you care about being throttled? Give us your thoughts. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Throttled or gouged is becoming the choice these days.
Yeah. What do you prefer?
Yeah, that's the truth.
And there have been stories all over the net from other cities. StopTheCap.com has got some interesting stories about people who have gone over their limit that they didn't really know they had or didn't understand how to check that they had, and then are told they're banned from the internet for a year because they've gone over their limit 3 months in a row. And for one story, they were saying it wasn't 3 months in a row, it was 3 months, period.
Right.
So 2 years ago, you might have gone over. Last year, you went over. Now this is your third strike, and now you're banned from the internet for a year.
Yep.
If you had bought our business plan, that doesn't have a cap on it.
What a surprise is
but
happening there.
Now you can't buy the business plan because you've been banned for a year.
Right. Right. We're seeing a lot more of this. I had hoped to find better from Verizon. I am a customer. I like their service. But apparently
and the
they
others
just want more money. It's mm-hmm. all about the money.
Well, the stockholders. They got to report to their stockholders, and that's all they care about.
We have to remember, we are not their customers.
Nope, the stock shareholders.
We are the product that we bring to their customers, which are the shareholders.
Yep.
Anytime you have a publicly traded company, that's mm-hmm. who is important,
yep.
not you. So the moral of that story is it doesn't matter who your provider is by stock in Verizon. I think that's probably where we should be going.
And most of the wireless carriers have said they're going to start enforcing their caps because so many people are now using mobile devices. And that's, you've talked about that in the past. That's the dichotomy that Apple and Google and Microsoft are all saying, use our mobile devices, get on the internet, watch your movies. And then your internet providers are saying, oh, no, you don't either.
Well, they're saying, yes, you do, but you'll pay a whole lot more. Yeah. You'll pay a whole lot more. I can't afford, you know, I've got Netflix.
Yep. This 2 gig cap is one movie.
It's half a movie, 2/3 of a movie. An average movie on Netflix is 3 gig.
Yep.
So right there is my month.
Netflix does have preferences where you can turn down the quality so it doesn't take up as much bandwidth.
Right. But then it only uses your whole bandwidth instead of bandwidth and a half or half your bandwidth.
But then it looks crappy.
Then it looks crappy. So you can either have a crappy service or pay a lot more for your service. And that's, I guess, your choice. This is America. That's the kind of thing you get. I don't think we have time to go to the phones now, do we? Not really.
About four and a half
minutes. All right, then let's go to the phones. Our next caller is, I believe this says, Pani from Brighton.
That's me. Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing good, enjoying the show as usual and learning a lot from you.
Thank you.
Boy, she doesn't know us too well. She called us gentlemen.
Yeah, she doesn't know us at all.
I do know you.
Benefit of the doubt. Thank you.
Okay, problem. I have a Lexmark 1200 printer, Toshiba Vista. I know it's not the best, but it serves my purpose until now. I have changed the cartridge in my printer as I was instructed to do so. It does do the scanning for me. It wants to copy, but then in the last moment it says no connection with the computer. And the same thing when I want to do printing, the initial printer window does come up. I set it ready to go printing, and when I click print, it says the usual thing in the window to check on this and this and this, et cetera, which I did do all of them.
All right.
Including buying actually a new connection cable, because once, long time ago, the same thing happened, and that's how I solved my problem, is by buying a new connection.
Yeah.
But this time it doesn't help.
Did you try a different port? In other words, a different PS tube?
Yep.
Well, then I have to tell you the sad news.
Well, before that, have you uninstalled the printer software and removed it from your print folder?
The only thing I have not done, I have restarted the computer. I have, you know, unplugged this and this and everything. I have four USB ports. I went all around the four of them. And so I believe I do have connection because it does do the scanning,
But does scanning... it scan back to the desktop?
I beg your pardon?
It scans back to the desktop, so if you put something through the scanner, you see it on the computer?
Yeah, but scanning and printing is still different software, different cues.
Different drivers.
Different drivers, so uninstall. Well, the first thing is just delete the printer from printers and then add it back again. And if that doesn't work, do a full uninstall and reinstall, and that might work.
Yeah, if you delete, disconnect the printer and delete it from your printers.
Okay.
Make sure before you do that you have the CD that came with the printer.
Download the latest version.
In fact, that's probably even better, download the latest version of the drivers. Or just tell it when you go to connect it to look on the internet for the drivers. And then, you know, reconnect it and set it up just as if it was brand new. Make sure it gets the latest versions of the drivers from the internet and see if that solves the problem. If it doesn't, then it is possible that there's a problem in the printer itself.
The only reason I said that is I had another client more or less did the same thing that she's doing, and we narrowed it down to that it was just the printer.
The print piece of it could be malfunctioning, and the scanner piece of it could still work.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole trouble with getting those all-in-ones. I mean, granted, they're cheap, but...
Purpose, you know, if I have a bigger job, I just go to one of the franchises and get it.
And it used to be that the all-in-ones, each piece of an all-in-one was pretty crappy, but it was cheap. But now, you know, $100 buys you a pretty decent all-in-one.
Yeah, they're good quality, but it may well be that first do the driver thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, but just quickly tell me that if I download from Lexmark the new driver, then where do I store it? Because then I have to uninstall the original and then put the new one in.
Well, what it's going
to
do is...
Well, you store it in your downloads folder.
Yeah, it'll be in your download folder, and it's going to be a packed file. So download it. Don't
unzip it.
Yeah, don't unzip it.
Okay. Just leave it there.
Okay, and then I'm going to uninstall the old one and put in the new one.
You got it.
Thank you.
You're
Have a
very
wonderful afternoon. Bye-bye.
You too. Good luck. That's one of the... I don't want to hear any more printer problems ever again. Not after the couple of days I've had.
Uh-oh.
But yeah, that's one of the problems is with an all-in-one. One piece may be working perfectly, and then another piece may not. Could be a driver. Could be something wrong with the printer. She did great troubleshooting, though. Pani, if you're still listening, and you should be, of course, you did great troubleshooting. You did all the stuff that narrowed it down to just one or two little choices, and that's just excellent. You did a great job. All right, we are going to take a break. You've wasted an hour of your life listening to us, but you get another chance to do it again right after these charming little member notices. We'll be back on the other side of that with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 58 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Sound Bites. Right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Grease
Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Almost one-third of U.S. adults prefer to be reached by text message rather than a voice call on their mobile phone, according to a study by the Pew Research Center Pew Research's Internet and American Life Project. Okay, 73% of adults text, 83% of U.S. adults are mobile phone owners. The study found that when it comes to a preferred method of contact, 31% of adults would choose a text message, 51% would choose a voice call, and 14% said it depends on the situation. 55% of heavy texters, those who exchange 50 messages or more a day, like Dave, prefer texting to talking. This is the first year Pew has polled the preferred contact method. That was an easy sentence to write in an awkward sentence to say. Pew polled the preferred contact method. Young adults between 18 and 24 text most frequently, sending on average 109.5 messages each day or 3,200 texts a month. My daughter, once again, far above average.
Some people, when the iPhone first came out, were printing, in fact, who was it? Justine put a video out of her 20,000 text message bill was 600 pages.
Yep.
Because the default was to list every text.
Yep. The average mobile phone user in that group sends or receives 50 texts each day or 1,500 texts a month. The findings also reveal that mobile usage is leveled off among U.S. adult population. These statistics are very similar to 2010's results. On average, 41.5 texts are sent or received on a given day. The average adult sends or receives 10 texts a day. Cell phone users make or receive 12 calls on average each day. The survey polled 2,277 adults over the age of 18 between April 26th and May 22nd. The margin of error for the survey is plus or minus 2.3% and plus or minus 2.7% among mobile phone users. possibly because they move around more. So our question to you is, how do you prefer for people to contact you on your mobile phone? And I apologize for using the word contact as a verb. What are your thoughts? 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I've gotten to the point where I don't like talking on the phone. It's what's interesting is it interrupts you. And working again in a retail store, it's always annoying when the phone rings and you're interrupted with the customer you're already talking to. And when I'm the customer, I hate it that they talk on the phone. So what I often do in my stores, if I'm already with a customer, you know, can you hold a minute and then put them on hold?
Right.
And they can wait their turn in line just like the people physically
standing
in the store.
There, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And that makes sense. And I have found that, for example, the other day, my wife called me up and said, you're buying supper? I said, great. Where am I going?
Said. Not asked.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. That's more than
that's
fine.
That's wives. Yeah.
And you know, where are you going? She said, well, the local sub shop. And she said, and this is what I want. I said, oh, no. Text me.
Mm. Yep.
That way I can walk into the sub shop and say, I need
actually,
this.
Actually, text them, and then it will be ready when
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of restaurants are now taking email and text orders. They have iPhone and Android apps where you put your order in, and it just shows up.
Yep. Well, texting is getting huger and huger, if that's a word, every day. I have there's a company in town. That has a product called Shift Alerts. And what it does, that's alerts with a Z, by the way, which is kind of cute. And what it does is you put in the schedule, and they make that real easy because that's not the important part. The important part is you hit a button.
Nick Francesco plus one that.
I love that. I do love that.
You plus one'd it. So.
I plus one'd it on Google Plus. Because what happens is you push a button, and every employee gets their schedule on their cell phone. Which means that you're now...
Because kids these days don't look at their email.
They don't look at their email. They don't look at any of that stuff. They also have a Facebook app, which is kind of cool. But the big point here is that you there's no more excuses for part-time workers.
Yep.
You know? And they surveyed, you know, all the places that they've got their software, which is everywhere. And every one of their employees, like... There's one place that had one, you know, well, frankly, old guy who didn't have a cell phone. But he can get his through email, so that's okay.
That wasn't me.
That wasn't you. You now have a cell phone. You're an old guy with a cell phone.
Well, no, I've had cell phone back when it was still the brick.
Yeah, I remember you were resisting texting for a while. Now we can't get your thumbs off the thing.
No lie on that, dude.
Uh-huh.
No lie on that.
It's that addictive personality.
Well,
you have.
I say, you can just do it so much faster than sitting there trying to maybe carry on a long conversation, waiting for the phone ringing and all that, especially when they just need to know yes or no or, you know, a quick reply.
Yeah.
Don't need to get on the phone. Oh, hi, how you doing? Yeah. Well, getting back to you about this and that. Yeah. Okay. Texting is a lot easier. To say, okay.
Right. My wife can now say, you're buying supper. Here's my order.
There you go. And
right? I don't even have to.
No discussion.
Right.
It is done.
I always get annoyed by the people that call us back. We call, leave a message with a customer. It's usually we need information from them or your computer's done, ready to pick up. And then there's a phone call that comes back and says, hi, you called me.
Yeah.
Okay. Who are you? If we called you, we probably left a message. So they just look at the call ID and then call right back.
Yeah.
Just listen to the message. So now we've taken to email people.
Yeah.
Which is tricky because if we have their only computer, they can't check their email.
Well, that's
something we can tell people. You can check your email on somebody else's computer.
Yep.
All of the email services have a webmail option. And then there's generic webmail.
Mail to web.
But Roadrunner and Frontier both have their own webmail.
Right.
So you can check your new mail on someone else's computer.
As long as you trust them not to be saving your passwords.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially if you're on a public computer, make sure you're not saving passwords. Look for the private browsing command in the browser if it has one.
Google has now instituted, by the way, two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
You can set it up so that when you type in your password, it sends a code to your cell phone.
Yep.
You have to type in that code before you can get at your stuff. So you have two factors, your password plus the code on your cell phone. And the basic idea there is somebody may have grabbed your password, but unless they actually have your physical cell phone, they're not going to be able to get into your stuff. I think it's brilliant. Yeah.
They're also doing IP filtering that if someone logs into your Gmail account from someplace unusual, you know, like all the Rochester addresses, if somebody logs in from Peoria or from Beijing, a message pops up and says, is this really you? And you have to answer this other information first.
Verification.
It would be nice if there was a way you could set it to never accept logins from, say, outside the U.S. or outside of New York.
I'm sure that'll come. Or you can say, instead of popping up and asking me a question, send me that code on my phone.
I can almost see that not coming, because how many people are going to accidentally set that and then they can't get into their own mail?
Yeah. Or just if it comes up off of one of my things, just call me. Because how many times are you without your cell phone?
A bunch of banks that I use have started what they call two-factor authentication, but it isn't really.
Yeah.
It asks for your password, and then it asks you another question. Well, that's something you know and something else you know. That's still the same thing.
Right.
Oh, one thing I got turned down in my phone was because I noticed in the previous bill, all of a sudden I'm getting this $10 charge, $9.99 plus the tax. And I went in, and she goes, well, didn't you go? I didn't sign up for
this
service.
There's sneaky services. They text you, and you have to answer to stop the bill.
And
most of the times you ignore it because it's junk.
Well, I went in there, and they put it in. So now any application that wants to get in there or that I want, it's got to go through me, and they give me a code. So now I got to put in the code before it'll even get through the phone. And they can't this way slide in there and just say, oh, well, he hit the site and, we got his information and, yes, he won. No.
We used to do that with book and record clubs. Mm-hmm. That they would, if you didn't say no, they send it to you and you got the bill.
Well, I had to do the same thing on my grandson's phone, too, because he was getting hit with a $14 charge.
Yep. So the text messages are kind of sneaky. We've had some customers get hit by this too, and it's here, sign up. This service is $9.99, and if you read it really, really closely, it does say that you have signed up for it and reply here to cancel the service. And so if you don't reply, they add it to your bill because you implicitly said yes because you didn't say no.
Yep.
Right.
Reverse psychology.
Yeah.
So it's.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Judy. What's your question?
Hi there. You guys are great. You bailed me out.
Thank you.
Many times.
Hilton Applefest next weekend.
Yes, indeed. Come down.
Oh, I plan on it.
And the suggestion for the Super Anti thing worked out fantastic, so now I have that on my computer.
Good. Thank you.
I got a message that says your virtual memory is low. What is that, and can I do anything about that?
Well, yes, you can. Virtual memory, you only have a certain amount of memory in your computer.
Okay.
And
what OS are you running first? And how much memory?
I'm not sure. How do I see that? I have a computer.
Right-click on my computer and choose properties.
Okay, wait a minute.
And it will tell you how much memory. You probably have 1 meg of memory.
Is
or
it Windows,
gig, maybe 2 gigs.
Like XP?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
My computer. Here it is. Right click.
Properties.
Choose properties. That will tell you your operating system. It will tell you your processor. It tells you your memory.
Okay. System, service pack 3, blah, blah, blah. Hardware, advanced, remote, automatic, system. I don't see it here.
But the main window.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, system
Intel
version,
Pentium,
processor. Yeah,
more CPU.
And below that is the memory.
253 GHC 52.
Let's say like 512, 1 gig, 256.
It says 512 MB of RAM.
Okay. There you go. That's the one.
Yep, that's your memory.
Here's the thing.
Which is
you only have
not
a certain
enough.
Amount of memory, and that's not much. So what happens is when Windows wants to do more than one thing at a time, it creates virtual memory, which is really just space on your hard drive.
I see.
And what it does is it takes the thing you've used least and puts it out there on that hard drive. that memory is very slow because hard drives compared to RAM are very, very slow.
Okay, no wonder it was so slow.
Right, and so as you run more and more things, as you up, and maybe, you know, 8 years ago when you bought it, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine, but as time goes on and you add newer programs and upgrade them,
right.
Mm-hmm. And they expect to be seeing a faster machine to run on, you're still running it on the same machine, you have a problem. So at the very least, you need to add memory to that machine.
Okay.
The second thing you need to do is probably clean out the hard drive of all the temporary files and junk that's accumulated over the past, say, 10 years.
Okay.
And that might help add a little space to it. But mainly, the main thing is you really need to add more RAM. It is an awfully old machine.
Yeah.
When you run out of RAM, it uses your hard drive. When you run out of hard drive, you get an error message that your memory's too low because it ran out.
That's the error message you're getting.
Okay, now we're going to bail me out after all the explanation. How do we add more RAM?
Well, that you don't necessarily do by yourself. You bring it to a reputable dealer and tell them you need to at least double the RAM, if not more, depending. Is it a laptop or a desktop?
A desktop.
Okay, then you probably have plenty of space available for extra RAM.
That's
so
true.
Then you just need to worry about how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, and the thing of it is how much do you want to really put into this machine? The holiday season is coming, and, you know, there's some great deals. You might want to seriously consider upgrading to a newer machine.
Okay.
Yeah, these days 4 gigs of RAM is standard, and you've got half a gig in that machine.
Oh, okay. Now, what is the cost thing here?
You can get some systems right nowadays under $1,000
for a whole new computer.
But if I want to add more RAM, what kind of cost?
Well, that depends on the kind of computer you have and what kind of memory is in there now and a whole bunch of things that we can't tell you.
All right.
Here, unfortunately, you're going to have to bring it to a reputable dealer and have them quote you something.
Okay. And how are you cleaning out the hard drive with the temp files?
We've got instructions on the Soundbites webpage.
If you go to the Soundbites webpage and click on links.
Gotcha.
Yep.
You'll see.
You want to run the disk cleanup utility inside of Windows, and that should be one of the links.
I see. I even have one of those.
Right. Dave's Tips, I think, has it there.
All right.
Sure. Yeah. The way you do it is you open My Computer, you right click on your hard drive, and one of the options is disk cleanup.
Right. But all you have to do is go to our website, click on links, click on Dave's Tips, and search for temp. And about 3/4 of the way down the page, it says how to delete temp files in Windows XP, which is pretty much spot on with what you want to do.
All right. That must be this whole situation why I keep getting these little error reports. Send, don't send for I don't know why. It just pops up.
Well, that's a program has crashed and it wants you to send the report to the developer on the assumption that the developer wants to see that report. And it will help them with why the program crashed. It almost never helps. But the bigger problem is that something is crashing on your computer and needs to be repaired.
Mm. Now, I'd like to change ISPs. How do I do that?
Well, what
call
you
your
do,
ISP and cancel your account. Call a different ISP and create an account.
Yeah, it's really all you have to do.
Okay.
You can't move your mail from one to the other. So
okay.
if
I don't use that one anyway.
Well, there you are
mail.
Then. That's perfect then. All you need to do is, I would do it in the opposite way, actually.
Yeah, start a new one first.
Yeah, start the new one. And once you know that's running and you're doing fine, then just call up and cancel.
Okay.
You know, take a look at your agreement as to whether or not you signed a contract for X number of years and whether that's coming up or whatever that may be.
Okay.
But in general, you should have no trouble.
Because I've had that one for like forever, and I just want to change it too.
Yeah. Right. We have to go. We have to take a break. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks much.
We're going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, right here on the lovely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, this is actually a pretty cool story. Library patrons and Amazon ebook lovers have no reason to needle each other over which source of books is superior. Or at the very least, they have a comfortable meeting place where they can quietly exchange both book recommendations and spirited taunting. As announced in April, Amazon now supports borrowing ebooks from local libraries. Library lent books will work on both Kindle e-readers and Kindle smartphone or tablet apps. Library books, though temporary, work just like any other Kindle e-book. When you borrow a Kindle public library book, you'll have access to all the unique features of Kindle books, including real page numbers, whisper sync technology that synchronizes your notes, highlights, and last page read. After a public library book expires, if you check it out again or choose to purchase it from the Kindle store, all your annotations and bookmarks will be preserved. Facebook and Twitter integration works, too. Here's one tricky part that turns out to not actually be so tricky. Naturally, you can't check out books through Amazon.com, but you also can't search to see if a book is available for library lending on Amazon's homepage or see whether your local library is participating in Amazon's program. If you know and regularly patronize your local library and its webpage, and you should, and this is no real problem, simply go to your local library's website, find the digital book catalog. Use your library card, and if you don't have one, get one. To check out the book, then click Get for Kindle. You'll have to sign into your Amazon account and have your device connected either to the Internet or over Wi-Fi or to your computer through a USB cable. If you're on a 3G Kindle, smartphone, or tablet, your book won't be delivered. It only works over Wi-Fi or directly through the computer. What if you don't know whether your library offers e-books at all, let alone the new Kindle book? Call them up. That's why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is helpful to know that Amazon's library lending is mediated by a third party, OverDrive. OverDrive manages digital rights for ebooks in nearly every format. So you can call up your local library and say, do you participate in the OverDrive program? What if plenty of other e-reader manufacturers, ebook sellers, have been working with libraries to make books available already? Nearly all of them use OverDrive as a partner for their robust DRM. The OverDrive mediates between the ebook manufacturers and many different kinds of institutions, particularly libraries. Your library's website may even have an OverDrive branded link rather than a Kindle one. You would then simply select which ebook format you want. So our question to you, would you borrow ebooks from your library? What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I just happened to think during that break there,
yes.
Folks were watching, wondering what I was doing.
Yeah.
For you folks that couldn't see it, I got a new tattoo and I was showing that off to Nick and Steve. Thought about the hair. Uh-huh. I was like, wait a minute. What?
Now you should show it off to the camera.
No. No.
Yeah. So I have a Nook, and I can borrow books, and Kindle people can now borrow books. Both the Kindle and the Nook have an e-reader format. Nook also has the color Nook that you can actually turn into an Android tablet if you want to. But and I have a Nook color, which I love, but I have to say the e-ink ones are awful nice because they're so light.
Yep. What's your name?
And the battery lasts months. And they're just super cool. They're just super cool.
What's kind of interesting in a related topic is that most of the rumor blogs are saying that Apple's going to release their next iPhone on October 4th. So now Amazon has announced they're going to announce something on September 28th.
Right.
Likely the Amazon Kindle tablet.
Right.
So it's everyone was saying it's coming soon, I kind of wonder if Amazon was waiting for Apple's announcement so that they could preempt Apple's announcement with their own.
That's the way the game is played, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're going to go to the phones and we're going to talk to Richard from Webster, New York. Welcome, Richard. What's your question?
Yes, I get phone calls once or twice a week from. They say they're calling from Dell. And they tell me that my computer, that they can tell that my computer is infected with viruses. And then they want me to go into a site where they can take over my computer and do whatever they need to do. And then
here's how you handle those.
Yeah.
Hang up.
Okay.
It's getting to
I
be
got scammed 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Is they were so convincing. Is there?
Oh yeah.
There's no way anybody can tell that you're even online if you're not on any particular.
Well, there are. You can buy from some companies a service where you run a particular piece of software on your machine, and then they can follow what's going on in your machine. They can log into your machine. They can do all kinds of stuff. But if you didn't specifically sign up for that service.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't download that software from a reputable dealer,
right?
Then the likelihood is that it's just a scam, mm-hmm. and you can hang up on it.
Especially if you don't have a Dell. The scammers are using big name computers, or sometimes they'll just say, you know, we're with PC Support Group or something generic mm-hmm. enough like that. And it's the scams are getting more and more prevalent because there's legitimate companies doing more TV commercials about we will scan your computer.
Yeah.
And
clean you up in minutes.
I would almost consider that to be a scam too. How are they going to clean you up in minutes?
Yeah.
Why would it be free?
mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, we'll give you a free
Why do so many of them have faint Russian accents?
Yeah.
My name is Peggy.
We'll check your computer for free. Oh, my goodness, you're infected. It's going to cost you $100, $200 right. to get it fixed.
Yeah. After they hang up, because we've got caller ID,
mm-hmm.
I can go back and find the phone call that they made.
Yep.
And I always get this same message from some consumer fraud division, I don't know whether it's federal or state,
yeah.
whatever, saying that they suspect that I have received an email And that looks like something that's legit, and then,
yep.
But it's not. And
yep.
A warning.
The FBI has a list.
One scammed forever.
yeah, if you get one of those calls, ladies and gentlemen, just hang up the phone.
Right. Don't say I
don't even. You know,
don't utter a word.
My sister-in-law did phone soliciting for years, and so I have sympathy for those people, but this is an entirely different class.
Mm-hmm.
Hang up with extreme prejudice. Don't even be
yes.
polite.
The FBI has their Internet Crime Complaint Center where you can submit a complaint, and the FBI will look into it. Since most of these are interstate related, that's why the FBI is getting involved, but
right.
a lot of them are actually out of the country, and it's difficult for local law enforcement to find them.
Yeah,
what we did just hear about a couple of months ago is that the Russian police, in cooperation with law enforcement agencies around the world, busted a scam center in Moscow. Hundreds of companies were using them as the credit card clearinghouse. So when you get that fake message on your computer that you're infected and we need your credit card number,
mm-hmm.
this company in Russia was handling those credit card payments.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Hey, glad you guys are on the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep. And they sound so legitimate that a lot of people get fooled by it, and that all it takes is one person to get fooled by it, and they've made their money. So and you call millions of people, and you can make a pretty good living as a bad guy these days.
Yeah, you can.
And sometimes it's even the people on the phone don't know it's a scam. You see ads for
right.
you know, telemarketing and make money, and here you run this program that calls the person and you try to sell them this product. They don't know it's a scam. They just think they need a job too.
Right. So sometimes you can't blame the guy on the phone.
Yeah.
Which is why I never swear at them or get angry. I just hang up.
Yep.
Doesn't All right. Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Hey guys. No, I was just talking about the open.
I'm sorry, I could not hear you. Could you start again, please?
I said, talking about OverDrive.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make an app like the iPad, so you can actually go right onto the Monroe County Library system, select your ebook, and once you've logged in that you have one of these devices, they'll send the ebook right to it.
Nice.
You download directly, and you read it just like one of the other books.
Cool.
Nice, thanks. That's excellent to know.
Yeah. Yeah, the service is called OverDrive, and quite a few libraries are using it. We're going to post the link on our website for it. So You can get books from the public library as well as other library sources. Oh, they got Bain's Free Library. If you like science fiction, Bain Books has a lot of their old sci-fi master and a lot of newer stuff available as free e-books as well.
Yeah, you can either download them right from the Bain Free Library website, B-A-E-N, Bain, and or right from through the Monroe County Library site. Very, very cool set of books. A lot of well-known authors who have just decided they've made their money off of this book and they're going to make it free now. And so you get a lot of good quality science fiction from them that way. And it's great that our library is doing that. So we're very pleased. All right, our next caller is Wesley from Alden, New York.
Well, actually, we're near Alden. Actually, in Wyoming County, small village called Colesville.
What? Called what?
Colesville, C-O-W-L-E-S-V-I-L-L-E.
Oh, I was going to say, I've been to Colesville.
Cole's name for our first postmaster, Hiram Cole.
Nice.
Cool. What's okay. your question, Wesley?
I have a XP on a rather old machine, Service Pack 3. I tried a trial version. I just couldn't get used to it. And I let the trial version lapse. Ever since then, probably about 6 months ago, every time on startup, a reminder that the version has lapsed and they want me to renew.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get rid of it.
Now, you uninstalled it?
Yes.
What you might want to do...
It missed something when it uninstalled.
What you might want to do is you can get it. You can reinstall Avast. You can get a free version. And then here's what you want to do. Before you install that... What I would recommend is getting a program called Revo. That's R-E-V-O.
Got it.
All right. As long as you got that on the machine and use that to uninstall the program instead of the stupid Windows uninstaller, it will get rid of everything.
Now, it just runs on startup.
Yeah. Well, there's
there's a registry entry telling this program to run, and the Windows uninstaller left it behind.
One thing
to solve your immediate problem, Avast has an uninstall utility.
Okay.
Steve is gonna post a link, but it's at avast.com/uninstall-utility. It comes right from the Avast site. It's called aswclear.exe. Avast software clear the software out, and that should get rid of everything from Avast. It should be because ad remove programs is doesn't work. It's junk, and so Avast does have its own utility called ASW Clear, and all you have to do is install that. Steve's posted the link on our website. And you can immediately get rid of anything having to do with Avast.
My question for you, though, is what was wrong with Avast? I'm just curious. I mean, I've got it, and I love it. I'm just curious.
I'm trying to remember what the problems were, but I just couldn't get used to it. And I've been running AVG.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very satisfied with it.
Okay. Yeah, AVG is a great product.
No, it's good,
no,
too.
No reason not to run it. So you should be able to remove it with this, but then Dave is right. If you install something like Revo Uninstaller and then use it to do all your uninstalling from now on, everything that you add after that, it'll make sure it gets every piece and part of it.
Okay, we'll give it a try.
Okie doke.
Good luck. Let us know how you make out, please.
Thank you. Will do.
Thanks. Avast is a great product. AVG is a great product.
And believe it or not,
it depends on which one you want to use.
Even the new Norton.
Now you're going way too far, mister.
Thank you. Hey, there's still some folks that, you know,
want a
paid version.
Are we still looking at Norton AV instead of Norton Internet Security? Because
AV.
Norton Internet Security is the big security suites. They try to do so much, and they bog your computer down so much.
Oh, no. The newest ones, the newest one, they even put up a meter because that's the thing. They were getting touted as being too much of a resource hog. They purposely built in a meter to prove to folks that they're not the cause of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they listened to all of the complaints.
Yeah.
The problem... Hello, that a lot of people run into now is the fake antivirus software. Norton Internet Security 2012 is the real name. And you'll find fake programs, Windows Internet Security or Windows Antivirus. Microsoft Antivirus is another fake program. Microsoft Security Essentials is the real program.
We actually came across NotRon. Norton, NotRon.
Yeah, NotRon, spelled wrong.
T-N-E-R. And, you know, you take a quick look at it, and your eye passes that right by.
Yep. Again, going back to we do things so instinctively.
Yep. You're used to seeing Norton, and you see NotRon, and it had the same logo and everything else. It's gone now because I'm sure the Norton folks pounced on it immediately. But it was there. All right, we're going to take another break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to you right after this break. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. Just give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Our next caller is Don from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Well, I don't have a question. I just thought you were talking about books that you can read on these e-readers. There's also a site where you can get audiobooks that are out of where the copyrights have expired. The place is called LibriVox, like library, LibriVox.org. And I've listened to all sorts of, ones from Mark Twain, some history of England,
Nice!
Biographies of Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
All sorts of things like that. And they're great, on any MP3 player or on your computer.
Right.
Like I listen to them when I'm mowing the lawn.
Nice!
So it's a kind of a change of pace from listening to music all the time.
Yep, makes sense. Thanks. Thanks, Don. Nice. That's great. That's a good LibriVox.
Yep.
LibriVox.org.
Yep.
You go .com, it's some other thing trying to take off on it.
Yep. Yeah. Right. We got it. Thank you.
Steve's got it up on the link list now. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
There's also the Internet Archive at archive.org, and they've got a lot of old radio shows and TV shows.
Yeah.
Trying to keep track of all that old content that we might be losing.
Yeah, when we travel cross country in the car, we load up the iPod with about a gazillion old time radio shows.
Yep.
Of course, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, about 500 CDs full of old time radio. So it's not really an issue for me, but even so, when you get the Wayback Machine,
the Wayback Machine lets you see websites from ages past. There's sound bites from November 98.
Yeah.
All the pictures are broken, but the text is there.
And it was an ugly sight back in the day. All right, our next caller is Mike from Webster, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you? Dave, if you answered the phone earlier, I'm sorry. I thought it was a call screener.
No, I am, sort of. I'm a jack of all trades here right now. I kind of run the board, answer the phone. Nick and Steve do a stellar job while I'm trying to do that to cover, and answer stuff and that. Because I'm so close, I got to talk, I have to talk low. And I've said this a number of times. You listeners out there, when you call, you don't have to talk low. You can speak up because I need to hear it over those guys. They're right near me.
Well, what's your question, Mike?
Okay, for the professors of X's and O's, I love your show. Sometimes you guys talk a little over my head, but
I don't know enough
about it. But here's the situation. I have XP, and I get my emails from them. And about 3 months ago, they said that they wanted me to update the email, and I'm old, so I want to keep things the way they are. I don't like change. Mm-hmm. So I didn't. Now, all of a sudden, I have to type in my email address completely instead of it just recognizing who I am when I sign on. And I wondered if there's something that I could get. I tried to email Yahoo and ask them, but they don't seem to respond to my email.
One, yeah, you said you're on Windows XP. Now, right. Are you up to Service Pack 3 at least?
I am.
Okay.
Now, where do you get your email from when you said you get your email from them?
Well, I meant I get my emails. I assume that an email goes from me to Yahoo to me.
Okay. So you have an at yahoo.com email address?
I do.
Okay. Then and you're getting your email through the web-based, you log into your browser?
Right. I log in. I have a login address, and then I have a password address. And what it used to do is when I logged in the first time, it said in a little square below, do you want us to remember you? And I always checked it so then the next time I went on, it just automatically let me in because it recognized that it was me on my computer trying to get on the mail.
All right. What browser are you using? What version?
Now you're talking over my head.
All right. Are you using the blue E, like Internet Explorer?
Yes.
Or the Red Fox?
All right.
No, Internet Explorer.
All right. If you go up there, there is a help. And if you click on the help button, it will tell you what version of Internet Explorer you are running.
That may
you
be
want
that
me to do that right now.
No, you don't have to do it right now. You'll have to do it on your own.
Okay.
So you can take your time and do that whenever you want.
It may be that you're running too old a version to work with the new Yahoo Mail website.
Ah, so they just automatically changed everything and went to... It's more of an inconvenience. And then it says, right, we can't read it, so I have to type it in a second time. And then all of a sudden it says, we still can't read it, but then all of a sudden that comes on. So I don't know if they're playing with me because I didn't do, slapping me in the wrist because I didn't do what they wanted me to do. So that's why I figured
I'd
ask
Yahoo
the guys
has
to
changed
do
their website.
We go through Roadrunner. I don't understand. It's yahoo.com.
Yeah, right. It's the browser.
Right. That Yahoo has changed things, and your browser may be too old. You may not have installed the updates to Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
You can try using Firefox or Chrome. Another browser may work better for you.
That was going to be my second question. I keep getting pop-ups to get on Google Chrome, and I'm thinking to myself, again, I don't like change, but is that what you would recommend?
Well, it might. I don't use Yahoo, so I can't tell you exactly what you're seeing.
Where's he getting Chrome pop-ups from if he's not already got Chrome?
No, it's an advertisement. They want me to, every time I go into Google, it says, you're getting them from Google.
All right, that makes sense now.
I don't do Yahoo Mail, so I'm not quite sure what you're looking at, but it is possible that in Yahoo you would have to make some changes for it to remember you.
I see. Okay.
And that might be somewhere in your settings or your preferences, whatever Yahoo calls it. But I'm not a Yahoo user.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a great pleasure for me to talk to you. I listened to you. I'm sorry you moved from Waymo because I loved you there, and I'm glad you're here. And
well, this is a beautiful place to be, and we're happy to have you home.
We don't get bumped. We don't get bumped. Right. We're here every Saturday from 12 to 2.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Good luck.
Thanks.
I just logged into my Yahoo account for the first time in I don't know how long, and it's telling me that mail is upgrading on May 2nd.
Excellent.
It says I've been a Yahoo Mail user for the past 12 years.
Congratulations.
Doesn't make sense. I don't think I have been.
Apparently they know.
Yeah. So you need Internet Explorer 7, Firefox 3, Safari 4, or Chrome 5.
Yeah, and that must be what's happening. He's probably
he just
got
doesn't
6.
Have an update.
Yep.
He's probably got Internet Explorer 6 or 5.
Yeah.
And you need 7, so maybe he just needs to do his upgrades
8.
To...
Internet Explorer
9.
8.
Right, 8 or 9.
8 or 9, yeah.
Whatever it takes, 220, 221, whatever it takes. That may be your answer right there is that... unfortunately, as companies move on, whether they're internet-based or it's a piece of software or whatever, they're in the process of leaving the old machines behind. You know, they're really at the point now where if you've got an XP machine, Microsoft isn't supporting you. Nobody's supporting you. And if your software doesn't work and they hear you're on XP, their response is almost always, oh, that is too bad. When you have a modern operating system, call us back.
Yeah, XP came out 10 years ago.
Yep.
It was good then, but it's the catch-22 that people don't like change, they don't like to upgrade, and you're forced to upgrade if you get a new computer.
Right. The real problem is that XP does everything most people want to do. And so there's no need to upgrade anymore, you know? And that's Microsoft's problem. They don't make money if you don't upgrade.
Right. And believe it or not, even the printer companies are doing the same. You know, they're not supporting the older software, so this makes you now have to go out and get one. Oh, I had one client still had a parallel port.
I was just about to say, try to find a printer with a parallel port these days.
He had one old one, and he tried to get it to work on a new Windows 7 machine.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen.
And they tried to sell him a parallel cable to USB.
Yeah, that almost works.
Which costs about as much as a new printer does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people are so attached to their old devices, they'll spend...
Well, and I do understand that, particularly in these parlous economic times. You don't want to go out and spend money you don't have to spend. But the reality is that the XP operating system is 10 years old, and that's like a million internet years. So there comes a point where even we won't be able to help you with XP because we won't be able to find information online. All right, that music tells me we are done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. The moral of that story is call in early and often, Chicago-style calling. And we'll be back here next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You have spent the entire last 2 hours of your life listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites. And if that wasn't enough for you, you can download the podcast and listen to it over and over and over and over. Linda Weilman's coming up with George, and she's going to keep him on the straight and narrow with some great German music. See you next week on Sound Bites at member-supported Jazz 90.1.